Welcome to Problem Solve, the podcast where me and a special co-host solve all your problems really easily, probably. This is a podcast where we explore the intricate world of relationships and navigate the complexity of mental health together. I am Jeff Gunther, a licensed therapist, but in this space, I'm your host, not your personal therapist or the therapist for our guests. This show offers a platform for open conversations about relationship and mental health challenges, providing insights and perspectives for educational and entertainment purposes only. It's crucial to remember that our discussions do not replace professional therapy or constitute a therapist-client relationship between myself, our callers, or you, our listeners. If you're dealing with personal struggles or seeking support, I urge you to consult with a qualified professional who can provide the personalized care you deserve. Thank you for being here. Let's dive in. Hello, Whitney. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I've been following you online on Instagram for so long. And like we were saying before we hit record, it feels like we already have a relationship. We at least have like a parasocial relationship, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you introduce yourself to everybody?
Absolutely. My name is Whitney Goodman. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I run an online support community called Calling Home for people who are working on their adult family relationships. And then I also still practice therapy with people who are dealing with adult family relationships as well.
Yeah. So we're going to be diving into that a bit, and I'm going to talk about my story around that. But before we get there, didn't you used to talk or sort of focus on like toxic positivity?
Yes, that was my book, Toxic Positivity, yes. That came out 2 years ago now, which is so crazy. Oh, wow. February of 2022, I believe, is when it came out. So that was my first book. Talked about that for a while until I got so tired of talking about it. Pivoted recently, you know, to something that family relationships were actually what really sparked my quest into looking at toxic positivity. So it's all, of course, always intertwined.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't need to like talk about toxic positivity.
I'm kidding. All good.
Yeah. I always wondered, because that's how I sort of like found you or got introduced to you, and
yeah.
I like felt like that was so compelling. And there's this, you know, obviously like toxic positivity typically isn't very helpful when you're talking to somebody going through a tough time, and then you're like, well, everything happens for a reason, or this was meant to be, or why don't you put a smile on your face? Like that sort of toxic positivity response. But I'm wondering, secretly, do you have some favorite toxic positivity, like things that you say to yourself that nobody knows about that actually like gets you through? Because I do. Like I would never say it to anybody, but I say things to myself. Do you have anything like that?
You know, I think I'm actually a very positive, optimistic person, which I think is surprising sometimes that I wrote this book. So I tend to kind of err on that side, but I feel like a lot of what I say to myself is more like, this isn't going to last forever. It's going to change. It will get better. I don't enjoy like everything happens for a reason or time that heals
privately,
all wounds.
That is my favorite one.
Really?
I love everything happens for
That's
a reason.
So funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's who knows, right? Like, I don't know. We don't know if everything happens
so
for a
true.
Reason. But I'm going to so just true. Like go ahead and believe it for whatever reason, because like in my own private thoughts, because it gives me relief.
I love that.
But it, yeah. And time heals all wounds. Maybe not like super accurate, but also like it usually does for me. So I'm just going to say that for myself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Anyways, I wanted to know if there was like a little part of you.
So
that
funny. It's so different when you say it to yourself than when somebody says it to you.
I know, right? Exactly. Anyways, we're going to pivot on to our other subject. And I really wanted to talk to you about this because it's something that I struggle with. And I'll give a little bit of background, and then we'll kind of like get into more deeper questions here. It's been a year and a half since I decided to put up some very strict boundaries with my mom and also my sister. And those boundaries turned out to be like, basically, I'm going no contact with you. But I gave both my sister and my mom a little map on like, if you do want to work on this relationship and get connected again, like, here's what you can do. And I was like very explicit and like, we need to go to family therapy. And if we do that, then I will explore going ahead and being more open to the, you know, into this relationship. But I'm going to talk specifically more about my mom than my sister, although my sister's kind of connected to this. I mean, very much connected in, into this. She's an older sister. She's 3 years older than me. And my sister, do you have any siblings?
I do. I'm the oldest of three.
Are you? Okay. Yes. My sister was born in 1977. And I was born in 1980, which is like right on the cusp of like Gen X and millennial. And I feel like my sister was like, I am 100% Gen X. And I was like, I'm 100% millennial. And I think that sort of like created the like the initial divide almost of like, we are parts of different generations. And those two generations, for a while at least, kind of had this, you know, little battle back and forth like most generations do. But when my sister was born, my mom and my dad, you know, it was their first kid and they were really connected to her and it was all very sweet. And she is maybe what a therapist would call like a spirited child, right? She likes to get a lot of attention. She was a little fussy when she was a baby or when she was little. She liked to be in the spotlight sort of thing. And she was really good, still is really good, at like asking for her needs to be met. You very clearly know how to like meet her needs because she will tell you how to do that. And my mom and dad were up for meeting those needs because if you don't, then it can like cause some conflict maybe. And then I was born and I came around and I sort of was this like second child of like, oh, so my big sister is getting attention in this way. I'm going to try to have a different personality maybe. Obviously not thinking about this when I'm 1 year old, but maybe that's what kind of like what's going on in the background.
Yeah.
And I'm like a little bit more subdued or quiet, or I'm just going to be like the good kid and play with my blocks and not cause any disruption while my sister is has bigger energy than I do. And there was just something about my mom being able to connect with my sister like right away. They have very similar personalities. They were best friends, best buds. Maybe a little codependent or enmeshed. They might not call it that. But they're incredibly connected. And they always have been. And I struggled since I was like really little connecting with my mom. And my mom will talk about this like freely and openly that she was just like, I just didn't know how to connect with a little boy, or I didn't connect with you when you played baseball, or you were so quiet and you didn't really talk. And my sister was like really, you know, talking nonstop. And it was easier. I would imagine that it was easier for everybody to connect with my sister because she just so badly wanted to. And so she gave you like lots of avenues to do that. And I was a little bit more guarded. And I was like, you're probably going to have to work on it or get down to my level or play a video game with me. But if my mom doesn't like video games or doesn't enjoy listening to my little, to the music, then there's not a lot of avenues for her to connect. So there was always that was going on. And then my sister is 4 grades ahead of me. So when she finally went to college and I went into high school into 9th grade, and me and my sister, like, we also just never connected. We had a very, like, blah, meh relationship. We got into some, like, sibling rivalry here and there. I wanted to be more connected with her, to my big sister, but our personalities are really different. She thought I was annoying. I felt like she was a bully, whatever. So when she left to go to college, I was just like counting down the fucking days until she would actually leave. She left, And I was imagining that it was going to like leave a lot of space for me to finally connect with my mom. Now that she's out of the house, this big energy, this tornado of energy has left. Now it's me and my mom and my stepdad. And I finally, but right when that happened, my mother fell into a deep depression, most likely triggered by her daughter leaving to go, you know, whatever, 5 or 6 hours away up north in California to go to college. And she was incredibly depressed. It was hard for her to get out of bed. And then her and my stepfather became addicted to drugs. And they had like a very nasty drug habit where they were addicted to crack, which was like just a really dirty drug, in my opinion. It's just sort of, it's like, it's the high only lasts for 7 minutes. You have to like keep on constantly doing it. Obviously, if you're like addicted to drugs and you're feeling depressed, like those are two things that are going to make it so that like you're going to maybe feel even more addicted or fiend or crave for that drug. And so for the next 4 years, while I was in high school, my mom and stepdad were addicted to drugs. So the like time that I thought I'd be able to be connected, that obviously didn't work out. And because of that, I became like a really angry 14-year-old.
As you could imagine.
Yeah. A year into like the drug use, I told my sister about it. My sister like transferred colleges to a closer college to like try to kind of figure out how to like navigate this. So me and my sister finally got close again. After 4 years of the drug abuse, my mom and stepdad like finally ran out of money to like afford these drugs, and their addiction stopped because it sort of like had to. And then they became clean. And they worked hard at getting clean. And to my knowledge, they've been clean for over 20 years now. Wow. But that like really affected my relationship with my mom. It actually made my mom and sister a lot closer in this sort of like even closer in this like now added traumatic way. Right.
Yeah.
My sister like helped her like get more clean, was there for her in an even bigger way. While I was like this 14, 15, 16, 17 year old, I was just so angry at everything that was happening. Then I go to college. My relationship with my mom is barely there because I'm still frustrated and mad and not processing the anger, feeling like I'm not getting any apologies from her. And then I move to Portland because I was just like, I just feel so disconnected from this family and I want to be away from them. So I move 1,000 miles away. We all grew up in Los Angeles. And then the relationship, like, we start to try to repair. Me and my mom start to try to repair. Me and my sister try to, like, remain close. It doesn't really happen. But because I'm so far away from the whole family and start visiting less and they start visiting me less, and the visits that we do have are very pressurized because I still haven't moved past all of the trauma. And even before that, I didn't move past like just the disconnect that I felt in the family of like, this isn't my family. I feel like I was adopted. Please somebody tell me I'm not actually related to these people sort of feelings, you know?
Yeah, that fantasy.
Yeah, oh God, I had that fantasy all the time. I was convinced that like, this is not, like I'm an alien in this family because they're all connecting in this very specific way that I can't connect with. It's just not working. Mm-hmm. I've been in Portland now for 18 years. My relationship with my sister and my mom and my dad have been kind of like deteriorating ever since. Eventually the pandemic happens. Me and my sister have almost this like coming to Jesus moment where we're like, this relationship sucks between us. We don't like each other. We're not feeling supported. I can't stand this. Let's go to family therapy. And we do. And so me and my sister go to like Zoom family therapy together during the pandemic. And it starts out, you know how sometimes if you're a therapist, whether it's a couple or a family, it starts out with, who's going to go first? So my sister is like, I want to talk about the hurt and pain that Jeff has caused. So I was like, let's do it. So she talks about all of her hurt. Yeah. So she talks about it and I like, you know, do the thing. I'm empathetic. I'm understanding. I apologize. I take accountability. It's hard to do. Sometimes I don't do it great one session. Sometimes I do it better the next session. The family therapist is actually really good guiding us through it. It's like 10 sessions. We get through all of the stuff that she's feeling upset about. She's feeling more peace and relief. Mm-hmm. And she's like, cool, therapy's over. And I was like, well, nope. Hey.
It's my turn now.
And the family therapist was like, no, we're going to talk about Jeff's experience. And she was like, no, I don't have the bandwidth. Ooh. I don't want to do this. I'm not coming anymore. Man. And she leaves family therapy. And I'm just like, ugh. Like all of a sudden, ouch. Like even more angry than ever, right? And she's like, yeah, instead of doing family therapy, Jeff, let's just like have a normal relationship, a sibling, let's be friends. And I was like, it can't happen. Oh my gosh. It's not going to happen. And so I was like, if you want to be in relationship with me, we need to go back to family therapy. And she says, I'm not willing to do that. So I will let you know. And so I've been waiting for whatever, year and a half now. But my mom was like calling me and getting really upset with how her daughter, my sister, was feeling throughout family therapy and was just so protective of her daughter. And understandably so. Like this relationship is the most important relationship to my mom ever. Like this mm-hmm. is they are like the same person. They are like inside of each other. The way that they love each other, protect each other, are there for each other emotionally, mentally, financially. Like there's just so many things bringing them together. So if I make my sister upset, oh my God, that makes my mom so upset. And then she takes it out on me. And then I finally said, like, if you want to go to therapy, if you want, like, I can't do this anymore with you. Same deal. We can go to therapy. She also, side note, my mom's a therapist.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, that is the context. I just talked for 15 minutes about my, like, life story there. But I have some, like, questions for you that I want to kind of like work through.
Absolutely.
That so that and if I like bring things up, then people will understand where I'm coming from. So there is also what do you feel are like typical like common reasons that people go no contact when they decide mm-hmm. to do that?
Yeah. So I actually just did a podcast episode on this where I asked my Instagram followers to share with me, you know, their stories of estrangement that did not include abuse. And so this was self-reported people who felt like they were not abused, but they went no contact. Because we all know abuse, that's the most widely accepted reason, sure. Right? Yes. So some of those reasons, and I think I got around 300 to 400 responses. Mm-hmm. I really looked at around 300 of them. Mm-hmm. The most common ones were boundary violations, not accepting someone's identity, so sexual orientation, their choice of partner, things like that. Politics mm-hmm. was a big mm-hmm. one. What were some other ones? Addiction, which you just named, mm-hmm. particularly when the addiction was still continuing today. Mm-hmm. And emotional immaturity was another big one. You know, people that were unable to take responsibility, to have conversations, and to be accountable.
Yeah. It's the, yeah, for me, like you said, it's the addiction piece that was like incredibly traumatic. It's mm-hmm. tricky though, because if I see a client that is struggling with addiction, which typically I try to stay away from because of all of my whatever, like issues around it. But if I do, I'm instantly compassionate. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. Funny. Addiction is a disease, right? Like, I can be there for them and be really sympathetic. But for my mother, it's so difficult to do. There's been times in my life where I've been able to connect with more empathy than usual. And then she does something to trigger me and I'm just like, I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you chose the drugs over me is like such a thing I used to say when I was a kid. And it's the what feels like emotional immaturity as well, of just like, mm-hmm. can we please just take accountability? And I think that my mom has tried her best to take accountability as much as she can, but it doesn't match my definition or what I need for when it comes to accountability. Yeah. Do you see that happening a lot in these cases?
100%. You know, I think sometimes people think taking accountability is saying like, I'm sorry, can we move on? Or, mm-hmm. okay, that happened. It's in the past. It's not like that anymore. You know, it's sort mm-hmm. of this, just this blanket acknowledgement where mm-hmm. for a lot of adult children, I find, and it sounds like this is what you're saying as well, you want there to be actual recognition of what happened and a recognition of how it may have felt for you. An understanding of that, of saying like, you know, those years where I was addicted to drugs, I could see how you would have felt lonely, unimportant, you know, whatever feelings might be coming up for you. That's different than saying, yeah, I did drugs. That was a bad time. And now I'm sober. Right. You know, there's an acknowledgement there, but it's not true accountability of the consequences of that incident or those years that you experienced.
Right, exactly. And I feel like that like would need to be repeated a handful of times for me to like really understand the thing that's getting in the way for my mom, I think, is her shame. And I think like I would imagine, I'm not a parent and don't plan on being a parent. Are you a parent?
I am. I have one son and I'm expecting my second.
Right. So I don't know anything experientially about parental shame, but I hear it's the fucking worst, right?
Like, it's not great.
To feel like you might be hurting or letting down your kid or causing some sort of trauma, like to actually acknowledge that you had that type of impact on your mm-hmm. child, like the person, the thing that you love, that you brought into this world, like that you are so protected, like you, like a psyche doesn't want to oftentimes get in touch with that deep psychological pain, right? Mm-hmm. And I see that that's probably what's going on with my mom. If she does take accountability, if she does really understand the impact that it has, and also there's also like the little boy inside of me that's like, mom, look at me, like choose me instead of my sister is sort of like this, or choose at least both of us, or you know what I mean? So like, choose me, love me, understand the impact that my sister has on me, and mm-hmm. also the impact that you've had on me with like the choices that you've made. But she's so protected and can't really, so if she can't really get in contact with that because the shame is so big, then it's sort of like mm-hmm. we're at this stalemate. You know what I mean? Is that something you often see?
Absolutely. And what's so interesting about what you're saying is that I find it to be pretty generational, that there is a belief among older generations, I think, that as they were raising children, that shame was not something they needed to really contend with. Like it was only a feeling that bad parents had, right? The worst of the worst. Mm. I find that myself, I'm walking around every day, and this might be because I'm a therapist, thinking, what did I do today that my child is going to bring up to me in 20 years? Like, I am so aware of the fact that I am going to feel that feeling. It's going to come up. It's a normal part of parenting that I think, and I hear this from other people my age, my generation, who are parents, that I think when you don't know that it's coming, when you're not expecting it, you don't have experience with that feeling, you're even more guarded. And it sounds like your mother is very much in that place of like, I don't want to feel this feeling. I never expected I was going to feel it. And I don't have the tools to deal with mm-hmm. it, because it wasn't something that was discussed in the way that we're talking about it now. Mm-hmm. Doesn't change mm-hmm. how it feels for you, but I think that could certainly be as part of her experience.
Possibly. And also like there are lots of things that she did, many, many hundreds of things that she did as a parent that were amazing, hit the ball out of the park parenting things, right? Sure. She was like financially always stable. She had dinner on the table at 6 p.m. every night. She was like there for me for school and like doing homework with me. And, you know, I could like list a million things that she's done. And I think she identifies those things as good parenting, as she should. Those were a part of her being a good parent. Mm-hmm. And then I started to like have a different definition or like an expanded definition maybe of like what I thought a good parent would be. There's also like this like sad... Is it sad? It's sad to me where like when I was a kid growing up, I either wanted to be like a baseball player or I wanted to be an animator. Like those were the two things I loved to do. And so then eventually after high school, went to college, found out I wasn't the most amazing baseball player I thought I was going to be. And I like, which is a shame. And I pivoted to animation and like some like computer science stuff. But that was like after high school, after my mother became clean, feeling incredibly disconnected. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to be a therapist, just like my mom. Mm-hmm. This is the avenue in for me to be like more connected to her. And it turned out like becoming a therapist made me even more disconnected because then I'm all of a sudden emotionally intelligent, which I was never before. I mean, I was, you know, developmentally appropriately a boy of the 80s and 90s, just like playing video games and problematic in whatever way I was in the 80s and 90s. But then once I started to like become more emotionally intelligent, I was like, oh, these are the ways that I'm feeling hurt. And also me and my mom are like two very different therapists. We have a different style, right? And we look at the world differently. So that like really backfired on me, which was really sad and upsetting. And I feel like there is just like kind of a dozen things that happen where I'm trying to get closer to her, but it's actually pulling me away from her even more as I'm like stepping into my authenticity.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And I think that could be why these things hurt even more when they're happening, because when you described the time that your mom, you know, became addicted to drugs, you described it as like, this is going to be my time where I'm going to get my mom's attention and be close to her. So the loss of that, I'm sure, made it exponentially more painful that your mom was going through that at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. There's also like, I can really doubt myself when it comes to, like the decision that I made to go or to put this boundary that created like the no contact of you have to go to therapy with me. I'm just like, am I just like, what is wrong? Am I being like so sensitive that I can't like just tough it out and like have fine. I can't be close with my mom. And, but maybe I should like find a way to like connect with her anyways, because the relationship with your mother or with a parent is so incredibly important, you know, like what society says or whatever.
Yeah.
So I start to like doubt myself. And there's this other thing is like, I start to feel like I'm being so white. Like this feels like such a white person sort of like I grew up in this toxic individualization, like sort of like where we're like, if you don't like your parents, then you cut them out. Like it's like very, when if I like would have grown up in a different culture, then it would, that was maybe more like community based or something, then I wouldn't have done this. And I would have figured out a way to like still be in contact. So anyways, do you see like a lot of people doubting themselves when they start to come up with these?
Oh, my gosh, of course. That was, I'm glad you said this because that was what was going through my head when you were talking about the ways in which your mom was a very good parent or that she did check the boxes, that I think that's a process a lot of people go through, right? This wrestling of like, well, does the good outweigh the bad? Is there enough there for me to like make these kind of quote unquote demands or to pursue this process? But it's interesting that you're pointing it back on you of like, how unreasonable am I being saying, let's go to therapy, but is your mother unwilling to go to therapy with you?
Yeah, she's unwilling.
Okay. So your mother, the therapist, won't do therapy with you. That's interesting.
Yes. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Also side note. Yes. So she's a therapist, but she's actually never been in therapy before. Have you ever met one of those There's not a lot of therapists that haven't gone to therapy, but she's one of them.
So. Interesting. It was like a requirement when I went to school. I had to like prove that I went to a certain number of sessions. So
yeah, she's been a therapist for over 40 years.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not sure it was, and she became a therapist in Florida. Florida does things a little differently, okay. Maybe.
Uh-huh. I'm from Florida, so I know that.
Okay.
Well.
So, yeah. So this is like a long time running thing for her to sort of like avoid going to therapy and being confronted with herself or with a therapist. So I also knew that chances are high, if I say you have to go to therapy with me, that she's going to say no. And this relationship could potentially come to an end, or for at least a while, right? Mm-hmm. I also can start to feel guilty because I'm like, well, did I explore every single option before putting this ultimatum on the table? I don't think I did. And I also feel guilty about that. But I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about like, what are some of those options or things that you encourage folks to do before they get to that point?
Totally. So if I'm working with someone that's kind of walking this path, the first thing I want to know is like, what has become unsustainable in the relationship? And is there any way that we can change things a little bit to make it feel easier? So some of that would be like lessening the amount of contact, the amount of visits, changing the certain like topics or things that the person is going to the parent for and constantly being disappointed by. I'm always thinking about what can you do differently if nothing about them changes, because we have no ability to make them change. And sometimes people try those things and they're like, you know what? My parent is still not responding well to that. They're violating my boundaries even more. They're pushing me even more. They're not accepting me. So that's when we might have to go one step further after trying like changing the contact or going lower contact to maybe then trying out taking breaks from interacting with one another, pursuing family therapy, which is something that you suggested, bringing this stuff up to the parent. Sometimes that can be more traumatizing than it is worth. And so I always want to know, what have you tried before? Have you written them letters, explained to them till you're blue in the face? If they've already done that, I might say, okay, what's going to happen if you do this again? And then we're really thinking about, what would going no contact with this person look like? Do you want to announce it to them? Are there other people in the family that are going to be impacted by this? You know, going no contact today has become this big event because of how connected we are. But there were people 20, 30 years ago who would just call their mom like once a year, and nobody thought anything about it. You know, they lived in California. Their mom was in New York. They didn't see each other a lot. And it was seen as more normal. Now, if you're not like texting or talking with your parent on a regular basis, people tend to question that, or there's more ways for a toxic, abusive, dysfunctional parent to contact their child. So I think there's a lot of different things we can think about like, you know, are you going to stop texting with them? Is maybe just a phone call once a month reasonable? But then people get to this point where you're at now, where it sounds like, I don't know, do you define yourself as being estranged from your mother, or in a period of like being no contact with her?
Can you define,
or do you see those as different?
How do you see them as different?
Yeah. So when people speak about estrangement, I find that there's a lot more of a finality to it. They say, you know, I am estranged from my mother. We do not have a relationship, and I don't see things changing moving forward. No contact, I feel, is often described as kind of a step before that of like, I'm not talking to my mom right now. I've given her, it sounds like you've given her some conditions on which you can have a relationship again. And it feels maybe less final, more temporary. Some people always stay in that space because they don't want to define it in that other way.
It feels like it's in a no contact place that might also morph into estrangement eventually. Yeah. I'm a therapist, evidence-based. I love science. And I'm also very woo and spiritual. like these two parts of me. And it's funny, like the way that I'm trying to kind of like mentally navigate the space of, am I no contact or am I never just, or is it like more estrangement where I'm not going to talk to this woman again? Jury's out, but I will, like, if I talk to a psychic who I think is like really talented or good, which is, I might do like every 6 months or so because I love a psychic. I'll say, like, do you think that, like, am I going to have a relationship with my mom? What's going to happen here? And all these, like, little psychics or mediums, I've only talked to two or three since I've gone no contact. They're like, no, this woman is never going to reach out to you again. Wow. You can if you want to, but she's done. It looks like she's done. And who knows if that's fucking right. And even if it's a psychic, it's only just a probable future. Like, we are in control of what, you know. But there's something about that feels true, that feels really sad. And again, I think it's probably her shame, if I had to guess, if she doesn't reach out here. Well, actually, here's a caveat, and I'm interested in like what your thoughts are here. So she knows the condition. She's not meeting that condition of going to family therapy. However, my birthday... So December was Hanukkah, Christmas, and my birthday. My mom's side of the family is Jewish. Mm-hmm. And during December, she sent me an email, a card in the mail, and a Facebook message. They were all like, I love you. I'm thinking of you. And I hope you're doing well. And I told her, you know, when we sort of like went no contact, I was like, do not contact me for anything. Do not say hello. Do not tell me you love me. And the next time you contact me should be like, I made an appointment for 7 p.m. this Thursday, or here's some family therapists I think would be a good match for us. That's the only time I want you to contact me. So during the holidays, this happened last holiday season, this happened this holiday season. There's like two or three ways where she like sends these messages of like, I'm thinking about you and I love you. And I get so triggered, Whitney. I'm just like, do you? Do you? Because if you did, you would know exactly what to fucking do. And you would make a goddamn appointment, right? Like, if you loved me, you would go to family therapy. But you are crafting this story, is what I tell myself. You're like crafting the story of like, oh, I reached out to Jeff. Yes. And she tells all of her brothers and sisters, and she tells my sister, and this is her narrative that she's crafted to tell her friends. Like, I just don't know what to do. I keep on reaching out, and he's not reaching out to me. And when she sends me all those messages, I ignore them. I'm just like, I'm not going to let this ruin my birthday. You know, like, I'm just going to, there's a part of me that wants to reach out and be like, and this is what I did the previous year. I was like, hey, want to let you know, this is not how I want to be contacted. I thought it was clear. Maybe I wasn't, or maybe you heard me wrong. The only reason you should be, you know, and I reiterate it. So I think about doing that. I think about yelling at her and being really angry. And then I think about ignoring her, which is typically what I end up doing. So there's this, like, she gets to craft the story. She's connected with my entire extended family. I'm not. And so there's, like, this, like, real desire to be able to, like, call all my aunts and uncles and the whole extended family and all my cousins, be like, this is what really happened. I haven't done that. I don't plan on doing that. But it's so – I hate it. You know what I mean? It's so upsetting. Yeah.
I think that's the story that you described is, you know, really like textbook what I have heard from thousands of people, right? Is this story of, I clearly explained myself. I have said what I need and what I want. And my parent is now coming back to me with these like niceties that are fine. On paper, they appear kind, but they're explicitly not what I asked for. And they're often in service, like you said, of a narrative of look at me, I am trying, And Jeff is shutting me down and he's mm-hmm. not allowing me to have a relationship with him. And I think that's a shame thing too, right? She gets to live in this place of like, I tried, look what I did, you know, and it feels nice, but it's not true. And this part that you're bringing up of like, I don't get to tell my story. People are misunderstanding me. They don't know what really happened. That is one of, I think, an extremely painful part of estrangement that people go through and is like so relatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That has been, yeah, if not the hardest thing, the top three, a top three hardest thing about this is just like the incredibly strong desire to like set the record straight.
Yeah.
For everybody mm-hmm. in the family. But I would come off as a maniac. I'm so angry and so frustrated. Uh-huh. I even have to like, all my friends understand what's going on and they support me on my journey and everything. But I even have to tell my friends like, hey, I'm going to tell you what my mother just did. And you're going to think that it sounds really sweet. I love you and I'm thinking about you on your birthday. And it's not. You need to be mad with me, you know? And I am clearly still in like an angry spot. And I don't know if I wonder like there's this part of me that like wants to hang on to the anger because it feels so righteous. You know what I mean?
Totally.
It also feels embarrassing because I am the therapy Jeff, right? Like I am so, I am a therapist. I'm so,
I feel
like
that.
I'm so good at being right, you know? Yet I have this mm-hmm. very unresolved part of my life that I don't feel like fucking resolving. Like there, so it's like this very like, feels very like adolescent energy. And I just love that energy, even though it doesn't maybe serve me in the long run. I still like it in there. Does that make sense?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, it's also the dynamic you're caught in with your mom in some ways. It's like wanting her to step up and be the parent and let you be that adolescent that gets saved in this and gets chosen, like you said, mm-hmm. you know, there's mm-hmm. even when you're coming to your parent as an adult, most of the time you're speaking to them from the childhood mm-hmm. piece of you. You're a mm-hmm. therapist, you know how to say all the things well, but the pain is still childlike that's mm-hmm. there. That's mm-hmm. not going to change.
Yeah, you're right. It's not going to change. And then I go to what you probably have heard plenty of times, like, well, I'm not a child. I'm a 43-year-old. I don't look 43, right? I look like 23, people say.
100%.
Yeah. I'm not a child, and I should act like an adult. And maybe there comes a time where, like, the parent of an adult child, like, maybe that dynamic shouldn't be the dynamic anymore. Maybe I shouldn't have this, like, parent-child energy, and I should be an adult, mm-hmm. and she should be an adult. I don't know how to step out of that, but I don't know if that's totally correct. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that gets weaponized a lot, like being mm-hmm. like, okay, you're an adult now, you need to take ownership. And I actually think that's what you're doing here is you're saying mm-hmm. I'm an adult. I have, independence and like rights as an adult where I can assert myself and say, I don't want to have a relationship with someone under these conditions who treats me this way. That's actually very adult-like. The child version of you was stuck in the home, you know, with a parent that's using drugs, or you're unable to escape those situations. And so even though some people might label this behavior as being like immature, to me, it's actually very adult-like to make these types of decisions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That makes me feel better.
You're welcome. A little validation for you.
Yeah, I'll take that validation where I can get it. Choosing to kind of like stay in the anger. Also, as you might imagine as a therapist, it also affects my own relationships, and specifically maybe my like romantic relationships, where like there's this somewhat I don't like to use this word, but I've used it already. There's like this somewhat unresolved thing of like mommy issues that I'm very resistant to sort of like working through. I have a wonderful therapist. She's lovely. And she was like, let's do some EMDR on this. And I was like, cool, do it. And I got in the way every single time until she was like, buddy, what are you doing? You're ruining this. And I was like, I am ruining this. I don't want this to fucking work. Because I had this like really interesting therapy session where I was like, I would rather be angry with my mom. One, because that feels good and empowering, right? Anger feels so empowering sometimes. And two, I know that this is going to like possibly have a negative effect on my own romantic relationships. And sorry, I just have to acknowledge that. Did you see those balloons?
What was that?
There's like some gesture you can make. I don't know how to turn it off on my computer, and this happens when I'm doing therapy online sometimes. A client will be crying or talking about something dramatic and confetti will burst on the screen. Oh, balloons.
I was going to do my best stage presence and just be like, all right, I'm going to let that go and bring it up later.
You did great, Whitney. I was able to. Yeah.
But I did see them.
Okay, good. Anyways, as I was saying, I was like, this could negatively affect my romantic relationships, and maybe my romantic relationships will be flawed forever because of that. And you know what? That's how I punish my mom. I punish my mom, right? You see how I'm doing that? I have like, I don't have like good long-term romantic relationships. I'm sad, you know, that's like, I'm tortured because of it. My mom knows this because of like what she did, and that's her punishment. That's like the only way that I can like affect her is by, you know what I mean?
Do you think that would actually affect her?
No, I don't, is the problem. Yeah. I don't think that's the way in.
I mean, just from what you've told me, it doesn't seem like she would take that on.
No. But there's I'm just like reaching for ways to affect her, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, but you're affecting yourself, really.
But I'm, yes, yeah. And I feel like that's such a fucked up, like human condition of this sort of situation where like, and then I go ahead and I question like, okay, well then should I just like have some sort of like surface level relationship? Should I just kind of like work through this stuff? And that's where, again, I'm just constantly doubting myself and the decision I made.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever wish you could just be like a normal person that doesn't think about these things like this, like a therapist, like thinking through? Yes. Sometimes I have that wish of like, I wish I could just be like aloof, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're putting yourself through a lot of turmoil about, and it's a big decision. It is. And it deserves a lot of thought. But I think what I find in everything you're saying is that a lot of it is coming back to you. Like, am I doing the wrong thing? Am I not thinking this through enough? And your mom seems very confident in like, I'm not doing that. And I'm just going to sit here until Jeff's ready to change his mind. And that, I think that's worth thinking about too.
Yeah, she's confident and she's really good at doing that. Like that is that's a skill of her, or that's an ability.
Like sticking her ground. Yeah.
Sticking her ground and letting you know where her ground is. And then just being like, you get to make the decision. One of the things that she used to say when I was a kid and we were doing something bad, or I was gonna, you know, I had to make a decision. Should I do the ethical thing or the not ethical, whatever? She would say, well, I don't know what you should do, but I'm gonna be interested to see like what decision you make, you know? Oh, like, wow. She's just like, I'm not gonna tell you, but I'm going to like watch it, you know? Like, I know.
I'm watching.
Yeah. And so she would sort of like sit back and wait to see what decision you make. And then you would make the decision and then she'd like have a conversation with you. But she would like try not to influence you, but she was clearly like influencing me one way or the other. Yeah. There's also like the, after I made the decision, or I gave her those conditions, I felt really good. I felt really proud of myself. I felt like I was being an adult. I felt like I was like being authentic and congruent with what I really feel. And and then there was a period for a year maybe where I felt like mostly justified. And like I was like, you know what? I don't even need a mom. And moms are overrated. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine. I'm my own mom. And like, I also have friends that like have mom energy. And I've like built like a really close community. And anything that I go through, I can reach into my community and I can reach inside of myself and I'm good. And then it was around like September or something of last year. Or maybe a year ago, whenever it was, 6 months ago or so. And I was just like, oh, shit. Like, something happened. I went through something, like, really traumatic that I never thought I would go through, that I'm not going to talk about. But I remember, like, one of the first feelings I had was like, oh, I wish I could talk to my mom. It was like halfway my actual mom. I wish I could talk to my mom. And halfway an imaginary mom. Like a fantasy mom, right? Of like, and I wish she would respond to me in this way that my real mom probably wouldn't. And then it took like, then I went into an extra stage of grief that I didn't know was coming, that I wasn't planning on feeling. And that's when like things got even more messy for me emotionally and mentally. Do you ever see that happening with people where like they make the boundary, they feel good, and then a thing happens and then they just sort of fall apart?
Absolutely. And I actually find that like as you get into the later stages of it, like the initial boundary setting is hard, but like you said, it can be empowering and liberating and all of that. And then after that fades is when the grief really starts to set in. And I think we see that with a lot of types of grief. You know, when you lose someone, there's a death, you might feel okay when the funeral preparations are going on and you have people around you and all of that. And once all that fades away, it gets harder. A lot of what you're saying is so consistent with like ambiguous loss, which I'm sure you're familiar with that term, that it's like this grief that doesn't have an end, doesn't have any closure. Your mom's still out there and walking around and living a life. And so it can be very hard to have like a beginning and end to that particular type of grief.
Yeah, exactly. It's constantly the grief. I would like to imagine that like a thing happens, you feel the grief, and then you go on to the next part of your life or the next thing that you're going to grieve maybe like and the grief kind of like comes to an end. This is a grief that just doesn't end, you know, like, and it's in it. And I wake up every day feeling differently about this grief. Sometimes I want to be sad. Sometimes I want to be angry. Most of the times I'm avoidant of it, you know? And one of the things that she said, I think maybe on our last phone call, was, well, Jeff, I hope that when I'm on my deathbed, you feel like you've made a really good decision.
Oh, man.
And it's such a – it's the worst one, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's – ugh. And I was just like, this – that's – fuck this. Fuck you. And I am thinking about that also. And, but you're now like, this is more evidence that I should like put up this boundary or go no contact with you, because like, I don't want a mom, I don't want a parent that's going to say that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope she doesn't regret this when she's on her deathbed. You know, I think we rarely flip it to be like, how are you going to feel that you didn't have a relationship with your child? And what's interesting is I've posted about this before, and it has really been a huge amount of people, an overwhelmingly large proportion of people who say they actually didn't regret it when their parent died and they felt a sense of peace. And I found that very interesting, because a lot of these people were saying, I was told my whole life, I'm going to regret this when my parent dies. I'm going to feel this shame and pain. And I didn't feel that. And so I think that's a story that we also have to listen to, is that sometimes people did make the right choice. I'm not saying that that's going to be 100% true for you wherever you go on your journey, but it is something to consider that you may not feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm very curious to find out. I think a part of me will feel that way. Another part of me will feel a different way. Right. Like,
absolutely. And it'll change probably by the minute, the day, you know, exactly. If you're lucky, you'll just feel it all.
Right. And there's the sort of like the look, mom, look at me sort of part of me of like, you know, like pay attention to me. It was so interesting because like when I stopped talking to my sister and my mom, like within the same week, that's when I was just like, okay, I'm going to shift on like posting content on TikTok and Instagram. And then all of a sudden my shit blew up and I was like, oh, whoa, yeah. I'm doing this. And this mm-hmm. whole new chapter in my life started where I became a content creator. I was getting validation from like the people watching my videos, which I was just like, this is weird. Like I wanted so much validation from my mother and my sister, and now I'm getting it from strangers. So it's kind of filling this like void, which feels dangerous, which feels like I'm going to become like addicted to this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so addicting.
It's so addicting. And then I got to like write a book, and I have these podcasts, and I have these all these opportunities, and I'm in this like very different part of my career. And there's that part that's just like, are you watching this, mom? Like, are you?
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you know if they do?
Well, so the problem is that like, I'm not talking to my mom or sister, but I'm talking to my dad. And my dad is a incredibly unreliable narrator, and he is a pot stirrer, you know, and he is emotionally immature in his own way. Uh-huh. And one of the things that this has done to the family, my decision, is that it's propped up my dad. So now my dad is like, look at me. I am the good parent. All the kids talk to me. The two kids. And he's feeling great about himself. because he sort of like always felt like he was in competition and couldn't compete with her groundedness or financial success or whatever. But now he's sort of the quote unquote winner because he talks to me and she doesn't, whatever. So he does sometimes report back like the things that she feels about my content. But it's only like filtered through this, like, oh, your mom is being so like shitty. And this is what she said about your TikTok video where you talked about whatever, whatever. So I think she watches. I'm not sure if she still watches. I have absolutely no idea, but I'm not like, I also know that while I'm doing this podcast with you, there's a chance that she's going to hear this. Right. So there's like layers to this whole thing where like she may be listening to this podcast and this is most likely making her reach out even less. Like this is not helpful for our relationship, I would imagine. And I just have to kind of like, so it's like this added layer of like, now I'm kind of a public figure. There's also this like interesting twist where like I felt like I didn't get to create the narrative of the family. And I'm just like, haha, fuck you. I'm doing it right now publicly. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe you have like the captive audience of our immediate family of those 25 people, but I have hundreds of thousands of people. Right.
Yep.
So there's like this weird battle of what's more valuable, our extended family's perception of what happened or like the public's perception of what happened. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know if she's going to listen to this and I don't know if she's going to respond to it. I think that she actually has like pretty good, what you might call like boundaries when it comes to therapy draft content. So most likely she's not listening. Yeah.
She might not want to feel the feelings that come with watching it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Just to kind of like, you know, start to end this conversation. Do you think that there's like anything, I don't know, important that people should think about or consider if they're kind of like going down the same path thinking about putting up boundaries, going no contact, and possible estrangement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the thing I always like people to remember is that every situation is totally different than the next. So you probably could hear things that we talked about here and be like, oh, I don't know if that fits my family or not. And also realizing that you don't have to make like these big sweeping changes overnight. Mm-hmm. We talked about this earlier in our conversation that for some people, just changing things a little bit can be helpful. Or then you realize, okay, that didn't work. I need to do a little bit more. And so giving yourself like time and grace and patience can sometimes really be worth it rather than trying to like rip the Band-Aid off and change everything at once. And I'm hoping that we can make these conversations not so taboo, a little bit more mainstream, and not make it like a personal failing when people struggle with maintaining their family relationships, because sometimes it's just bad luck, honestly, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Where can people find you if they want to follow you or get in contact with you?
You can find me on Instagram at SitWithWit. On TikTok, I am at Whitney Goodman, LMFT. And then you can check out more about Calling Home at callinghome.co.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. You're one of my favorite therapists / creators. And I hope that I get to talk to you again soon.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Okay. Bye.